Hello, my name is Stephen Bigelow, features writer with TechTarget Storage Media Group, and I'm speaking with Arun Taneja, founder and consulting analyst with the Taneja Group in Hopkinton, Massachusetts. Arun, thanks for joining us today to talk about storage virtualization.
Oh, you're quite welcome, Stephen.
Arun, storage virtualization has been a real sticking point for many of our readers. There are lots of questions about storage virtualization technology, deployment, and performance. So let's go through some of the most frequent questions that you encounter. And I guess the most obvious place to start today is with a definition. What is storage virtualization? Why do I need it? And what does it really do for me?
Well, that's a good starting question, Stephen. There's a significant amount of fusion in the market in general about virtualization, not necessarily associated with specifically with storage, but clearly we've seen a lot of interest and excitement in the server virtualization world, and now that same kind of enthusiasm is coming into the storage virtualization side. So actually, even before I give you a definition of storage virtualization, let's step back and look at what the next generation data center is going to want to look like. And fundamentally, unlike today's data center, which is sort of made up of, a very large number of systems that are sort of complete unto themselves. In other words, there's a server, it's got, some storage attached to it. That server has a particular operating system, Windows, Linux, Solaris, whatever it might be, and it runs a particular application. And that particular, stack, if you like, is a silo, and you have literally hundreds and sometimes thousands of these silos that exist in today's data center and in larger enterprises. Because of this proliferation, managing the environment has just become very difficult. And so the idea is to actually provide a layer of virtualization at the server level, which is being done with products such as Zen Source or VMware or Microsoft Virtual Server, and then you have virtualization that can be applied at the networking layer, and then there's virtualization that can be applied at the storage layer. So the whole idea is to go into an overall virtualized data center environment over the next 2 to 3 years, so that the so-called utility capability becomes available. So we don't have all these silos. So managing the overall environment and extracting value out of that environment just increases. And we start getting applications delivered to us as if they were a utility, completely nonstop, and delivering whatever performance that the business group has actually asked the IT folks to deliver. So that's kind of the overall vision. With that backdrop, maybe I can talk about storage virtualization now. So storage virtualization, think of it as an abstraction layer put on top of a large number of physical storage devices. Because just like the silos I described to you in the overall data center, well, as you know, we have massive proliferation of storage devices, physical storage devices, and arrays and JBODs and RAID, et cetera, all over the enterprise, not only in the data center but even outside of the data center. And managing all these storage boxes has just become literally impossible. So storage virtualization is an abstraction layer that hides all the various idiosyncrasies of each individual physical device and gives you a common way of dealing with all of these different disparate devices, and it enables a bunch of advantages, if you like. Certainly, starting with much easier storage management. There's a variety of other things that I think it's important for the listener to understand and relate to. So storage virtualization basically enables a consistent interface for all storage applications. So, in other words, if you look at an individual storage array today, that array, whether it's from EMC or Hitachi Data Systems, from IBM, whatever it is, that particular array comes with its own set of storage applications. Applications like array-to-array virtualization, replication, applications like mirroring, snapshot, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of those are unique and different for each of those scenarios. If you added storage virtualization on top of these heterogeneous boxes, if you like, it will enable a consistent single set of storage applications, so I don't have to worry about learning the different ways of doing applications on a EMC Symmetrix versus on a Hitachi Data Systems Tagma Store or an IBM Shark. And similarly, you know, if you want to migrate data in a non-disruptive way, if you want to do data consolidation, all of those activities today are very, very disruptive to the organization, to IT, and to the business users. Storage virtualization essentially makes all of those types of activities non-disruptive. I mean, let's say that you have an application that's being protected by mirroring, so that would be RAID 1. For whatever reason, now that particular this application is okay to be protected with RAID 5, or what do we have to do today? You have to essentially back up the data and create another RAID 5 LUN and then bring this data back onto it. A disruptive process. If you want to create tiers of storage, today you have them as physical box 1, box 2, box 3 as tier 1, tier 2, tier 3. You cannot bring those boxes together in any way, shape, or form. Storage virtualization enables that as well. And clearly, it does enable replication between heterogeneous boxes. So if you want to go from a Symmetrix to a Clarion today, that's not an easy thing to do. I need some external method to do that. Well, if I had storage virtualization within the environment, that replication would be feasible with no interruption to any applications up above.
I think that makes a terrific second question. Who's involved in this technology, and what are some of the principal differences between their offerings?
Absolutely. So there's a number of players in the market today, and I will sort of broadly speaking, let me categorize them as the in-band vendors, in-band appliance vendors and products, and then I will talk about out-of-band vendors, and I also want to come and talk about SPAID, S-P-A-I-D, or split path architecture for intelligent devices, storage virtualization products and vendors. So within the first category, which is the in-band category, we have companies like IBM with their SVC or storage virtualization controller product. You have DataCore with their SAN Symphony product, and you have Falcon Store with their IP Store product. So those are three very good examples of who's in the game, and they're all three of those are seasoned players and actually have had a storage virtualization offering for between 3 and 5 years. Good solid investment of time and experience in the industry. In the out-of-band category, there is a company by the name of StoreAge. StoreAge was recently acquired by LSI Logic, and StoreAge pretty much has been the only out-of-band storage virtualization product in the industry, and they certainly run on their own Intel server-based appliance, but more recently, they've also ported that software to what I call purpose-built appliances, one from QLogic and one from Emulex. The Emulex one is actually just being announced, either today or yesterday. It was brought into the marketplace, and I know it's model 765. Those are purpose-built hardware products, and StoreAge is the application, virtualization application, that's been brought on to work on those. And then the third category of product is from companies such as Incipient, and I would also put EMC Invista in that category. So those two products at the architecture level are both designed to be split path. So in that regard, they're similar to an out-of-band architecture, but they're both designed to absolutely require an intelligent switch to be in the environment. So as Incipient works with Cisco, and so does Invista, for example, from EMC. Both of those products work on Cisco intelligent switches. Not to say that they do not work with the Brocade and McData intelligent switches, but we do know that the Cisco offering has been ahead of the other two, so therefore I mentioned that particular product first, but certainly those two products are designed to run with Brocade and McData intelligent switches as well. There is a fourth category, and there's only one example of that in the industry, and that is from Hitachi Data Systems. Hitachi Data Systems actually has their virtualization implemented through their controller, which is inside their storage box or Tagma store. It's basically designed to both be a storage controller, as it was before, and a storage virtualization controller, which is a new functionality that's been added on top of it. So those are the main players that that come to mind.
Excellent, Arun. Those are some terrific insights. And I think that takes us on to, I guess, the idea of product maturity. Is the market ready for storage virtualization? Are the products ready? Can you give us some insights on that?
Well, the short answer is, in my view, the products are absolutely ready. The wine has been ready now for a while. It's taken a while. It's taken 3 or 4 years to bring the products to this level of maturity where I feel good about saying that, yes, they're ready for production environment. Yes, I think products from IBM, DataCore, Falcon Store, Storage, Incipient, and Hitachi Data Systems, they're certainly very ready. EMC Invista has been out in the market for a while, but it's a little further behind the rest of products in the industry. So certainly, if you a listener was an EMC customer, then check it out. Make sure that they've actually got all the bells and whistles added to the Invista product, because I haven't heard very much on that for the last several months. I'm therefore not 100% sure exactly what the status is, but all the other products are here and ready to be brought into a customer's environment. I should also mention, because you asked about the readiness of the technology, that you know all the examples that I just gave you, think of all of them as examples of heterogeneous storage virtualization. They're all designed to basically virtualize across dissimilar hardware pieces, not to say that they will not work and bring very valuable services, even on top of homogeneous storage devices from the same vendor. There's still significant benefits that accrue, but the product itself is designed to be for the heterogeneous, therefore homogeneous just becomes a subset of that. There are other products in the industry where companies have done an awesome job, in my view, of applying virtualization within a single box, a homogeneous environment, if you like. Three-part data is a good example. Compellent is a good example. Pillar data is a good example of that. And I would put Xiotech in that category as well. Those vendors have focused on applying very good storage virtualization principles to their own product and haven't necessarily gone out and say that they want to virtualize across other foreign products, if you want to think of it that way. Definitely keep that in mind, that those products are certainly ready for prime time. And I just want to make sure that, for completeness sake, the listener understands that storage virtualization techniques have also been applied in the world of files, and certainly on the iSCSI side as well, on the block side. And there are different vendors in each of those categories. On the file side, when we talk about the NetApp's GX product, for example, or we look at PolyServe, or we look at Exanet, or we look at Isilon, those products are absolutely utilizing storage virtualization principles, once again, with a file delivery focus, you know, with a homogeneous focus. And then on the iSCSI side, companies like Intranza, Left Hand Networks, Equilogic, have products that use storage virtualization principles to make their storage boxes much easier to use than, you know, what we've seen in the past from so-called legacy vendors.
Explain to us the difference between storage virtualization as software and storage virtualization implemented as an appliance. Can you give us a sense as to which is better and why?
Think of an appliance being software that's been installed on a standard Intel server, and that combination in the industry is generally referred to as an appliance. The benefit of something like that clearly is the fact that, you know, Intel servers are popular, easy to obtain, have high degree of standardization, and therefore there is an economic benefit that comes from putting a software on an Intel server like that. So if you think of Falcon Store software, if you think of IBM's SVC, or if you think of DataCore, I mean, all of those are fundamentally software products, but they're delivered in an appliance. Falcon Store is actually delivered as a software-only offering or as an appliance. DataCore is delivered as a software-only or as an appliance. Actually, in all three cases, I'm sure one can find the vendor willing to supply either the software or a out-of-the-box experience with an appliance. So ease of use is typically the way to look at those scenarios. If you need performance that is greater than what you're going to get from a standard Intel server, that's when you start looking at purpose-built appliances like the ones from Emulex and from QLogic. Those appliances are dedicated virtualization platforms, and software is actually loaded on it. They're most definitely an appliance as well. They just happen to be purpose-built hardware. So I'm not sure if I necessarily would think in terms of whether software way is better or appliance way is better. The appliance method is a delivery mechanism, and depending on the customer, on the IT shop, the purchasing of that thing as a software-only product may be beneficial to them, or it may be easier for them to buy an appliance. Each individual situation is actually going to vary.
Talk to us briefly about performance. Does storage virtualization impair storage performance or add network overhead to the SAN? And if it does, how can any potential effects be mitigated?
I think it'd be fair to think in terms of any time you put a layer of anything between A and B, in this case, physical storage and the infrastructure up above, including switches and servers. So anytime you put a layer of abstraction, the fundamental principles of computer science say that's going to add some latency, and therefore that will be a performance impact. But having said that, depending on the type of virtualization product that one decides to buy, there can be, in fact, performance increases. And I use a very simple example. Let's say that we had a very simplistic environment of JBOD on the physical side. Because a product such as IBM SVC is a caching product, it is able to actually cache a bunch of data before it sends it over to the server, or vice versa, being cached and then moved down to the JBOD side. A product like that can actually not only add RAID functionality on top of JBOD through the virtualization package, but then also increase performance up above for specific applications. But I think in general, it would be a fair assumption that there is a performance impact. I think that would be a general guiding principle that any user should start with, and then question the vendor in terms of what that impact is. If the impact is positive in the situation that I described, then so be it. But I think there will be a certain impact, whether it's measured in 3% or 5%, you know, it's obviously going to depend on the situation, but there will typically be an impact. And that's why it's important for very high performance and very highly scalable and very large enterprises to seriously look at intelligent switch-based or purpose-built appliance-based virtualization solutions, because they mitigate that performance impact or for all practical purposes, essentially eliminate it.
The next question to cover with you today is a bit more about implementation. And you alluded to this earlier in our discussion, but it's a good time to expand on it now. Where should storage virtualization be done? At the host, at the network, in the array? What do you suggest?
Very good question, and you know, big source of debate in the industry. So let me discard host-based right up front, because host-based storage virtualization, it was, in fact, the first virtualization product in the open systems world that came from Veritas more than a decade ago, and was designed to essentially allow a single server to look at, you know, a number of physical devices from different vendors in a consistent fashion. It was a single server solution, and it just gave you the ability to deal with a product from vendor A and a product from vendor B, and I mean storage products. That is not adequate anymore. So therefore, the two options then are to do storage virtualization in the network or to do storage virtualization in the controller. Let me also deal with the controller part of it. The only example of a controller-based virtualization solution in the market is Hitachi Data Systems. So the pros and cons of that, clearly, because the virtualization is being done inside a Tagma store from Hitachi Data Systems, then if a customer is heavily into Hitachi Data System environment, then absolutely, by all means, consider that. But keep in mind that all storage traffic, whether it comes from another Hitachi Data System box or a non-Hitachi Data Systems box, everything has to go through into the Hitachi Data System box and then come out from that controller. It's a good solution for those customers that are heavily into HDS. If you're highly heterogeneous, then in that case, I think considering one of the network-based solutions that I mentioned are probably going to be more suitable once again, when you're in doing virtualization in the network, then you have those three different ways of doing it. The appliance method, which is Intel server appliance-based, you have the intelligent switch method, and you have the purpose-built appliance method. All of those three belong in the network. So if you're highly heterogeneous, I would say that that would be the place to look. And whether or not you go with an intelligent switch base or a PBA or an appliance, I think in one dimension will depend on which storage vendor you have a partnership with already, and secondly, what kind of scalability and performance be adequate for your particular scenario.
The next question that I have for you basically has to do with getting the most out of storage virtualization. We know that virtualization can help improve storage utilization, so how do activities like capacity planning and management play into storage virtualization?
You know, the relationship is very synergistic in the sense that, let's say that we have a 1 terabyte box A and we have another 1 terabyte box B, and let's make the assumption that they're both relatively equal capability. In other words, let's say they're both tier one storage. I can create a pool of storage between those two and have a pool of storage which would be a total of 2 terabytes. Because it's a fluid pool of 2 terabytes, my capacity planning comes a lot easier, particularly if the storage virtualization software that I'm actually using in conjunction with these 2 1-terabyte boxes, if that product happens to give me thin provisioning, I have lots of new options that have become available to me from a capacity planning perspective, where I can over-allocate to the application and have less physical capacity than I've allocated. So the applications are happy doing what they need to do. But at the physical level, I'm actually enjoying very good capacity utilization as the real need of the systems of the servers start to approach the physical capacity that I have in this 2-terabyte pool. An alarm or alert comes on and tells me that I need to add additional capacity. So my add-on capacity would be at a much more granular level, and I could start enjoying some serious CapEx advantages. So the concept of storage virtualization and better storage utilization, improving capacity planning, and improving the usage of what I have physically, they're all synergistic, totally kind of bonded to each other.
The other issue that comes up a lot, Arun, is the concept of backing out of virtualization. I mean, anytime you try to deploy a new technology, it's always good to have a parachute. Now, once a layer of virtualization is added to the storage infrastructure, really, how difficult is it to remove or back out of that virtualization later?
That's a million-dollar question, probably multi-million-dollar question, because virtualization is, in many ways, a very, very strategic decision for a company to make, and you want to make it with total consciousness of what you're doing, and selection of the right vendor becomes crucial in this situation, because I'm not going to say it's a one-way street, because certainly there are methods of, you know, reverting back to physical, but they're not easy, because once I've gone into a virtualized environment, the relationship between what is being presented as storage to the server and where that physical storage is coming from, all that thing is completely abstracted out. The IT storage administrator is not going to know precisely where storage is coming from. So therefore, I recommend and I suggest pick your vendor very carefully. You will probably live with that vendor's storage virtualization offering for years and years to come. Be cautious of that. I'm not suggesting that you cannot back out of it, but backing out is a painful project, because basically what you'll have to do is essentially take each of the back up the data somewhere else and then bring the data back onto to a physical volume on a physical storage device. You do not want to go do that unless it becomes totally, totally necessary.
With that issue really on the table, Arun, I guess the best thing to do now is expand on that and ask you, are there any other known problems or limitations to storage virtualization technologies or products that our listeners should be aware of?
Clearly, as a new technology, solutions are at all the different solutions we see in the marketplace. And there are different stages of evolution. Like I mentioned before, the IBM SVC product, the DataCore SAN Symphony product, and the Falcon Store product and storage product, they've all been in the market for a very long period of time. And so So they've actually added on a very complete suite of storage applications on top of the virtualization layer. But even then, there are some applications like the thin provisioning that I mentioned. Thin provisioning is available through some of the homogeneous virtualization players like 3PAR and Compellent and Xyotech, but they're not necessarily available yet from the storage virtualization players. They are being done. They will be added on to it. So I think the baseline functionality is complete on most of the products that I mentioned. You should definitely check them out. Make sure that the applications that you're using on this on the physical arrays, a reflection of that software, application software is available on the layer above the abstraction layer. But I think the baseline is pretty strong right now. It's a good time to be evaluating and entering into that marketplace because I see a very large need for this, particularly now that the server virtualization side of it is starting to become quite stable and quite prolific in the marketplace. The combination of using server virtualization and storage virtualization has very large benefits. So if you've done server virtualization but you haven't done storage virtualization, you will enjoy some benefits, but you will not enjoy complete benefits. So I believe that the time for storage virtualization is here, and I expect that 2007, this year, is actually going to be a big year for this technology.
We've gone on along talking about storage and considering placing storage into a virtualized pool. And I have to ask, is there any storage that should not be placed under a storage virtualization layer?
The only thing that I would suggest on that is if you've got an isolated application that's sort of, you know, out there on the edge and it's working and it's doing its job and there is not much maintenance to that thing, you're not adding new storage to it all the time, the performance is adequate and the application is sort of isolated, well then in that case there is no particular need to bring that under the storage virtualization fold. But outside of that, there's no particular application per se that instantly stands out as, oh, that must not be put under storage virtualization umbrella. But there is an aspect that just came to my mind, I think, is important for the listener to understand, and that is if a storage virtualization solution is asking you to give 100% control of a physical storage box in one shot. In other words, here's a 30, 40, 50 terabyte EMC Symmetrix, and the storage virtualization software demands that the entire capacity be actually put under the control of the storage virtualization software, well, then I say be very careful of that because you want to bring in the volumes in a measured fashion and make them available to the storage virtualization software. If it's an all-or-nothing kind of a scenario, that would be a matter of concern to me. That would be a bigger issue than are there any particular applications that do not belong under storage virtualization, particularly since we've talked to a fairly large number of folks in IT that have actually had the experience. Majority of them, when I really press on them about their experience and what they would do differently, one of the things that comes up fairly regularly is they would actually make some guidelines before they got onto the storage virtualization bandwagon. They would provide guidelines to a lot of communities within their IT function to make sure it was a measured process. Because remember, provisioning becomes much easier, for example, once you're under the purview of storage virtualization. It could go a little haywire in terms of people willy-nilly just provisioning storage all over the place. No, you have to. So bring it in nice and slow under the storage virtualization umbrella and have a set of strong guidelines for the IT folks so that there's some consistency in the way this application is being brought into the environment.
Arun, I think that brings us down to our last question today. Obviously, the focus here has been on storage, but are there any other considerations beyond just storage when you're talking about storage virtualization? Anything else our readers should look out for or consider when they're planning on storage virtualization?
Let me say it in reverse because I think that's more relevant today. Basically, let me look at it from a server virtualization perspective. Some of the early server virtualization implementations I'm sure the listeners know, the idea in a server virtualization environment is to create a number of virtual machines onto a single physical server. So let's say that I have a physical server and I create 20 virtual machines on top of that. Let's say the physical server only has one or two HBAs and all the storage is connected through those one or two HBAs. Clearly, all of these 20 different virtual machines, they're all actually going to funnel through this one or two HBAs. And very quickly, we found in those early scenarios that the I/O became a massive bottleneck, to the extent that the IT folks had to reconsider putting 20 virtual machines on a single server. So it started to impact the server virtualization side. Basic point I'm trying to make is that there's a synergy between what's happening between the service virtualization side and what's happening on the storage side. With or without virtualization, that issue is there. And clearly, without storage virtualization, one of the ways that the industry has been solving that problem is by incorporating what is called NPIV standard or NPort ID virtualization standard, which essentially makes the HBA kind of split up into 20 logical pieces and, you know, attach one-for-one correspondence with each virtual machine. Well, once I do that, then your storage does not become a bottleneck. So we're finding that the server virtualization folks like VMware have become cognizant of this storage-server interaction and the bottlenecks that can be created. And so as a result of that, if you look at the product, the VI3 release that VMware made a short time ago, maybe 2 or 3 months ago, there are various storage-centric facilities that they've added within that thing, one called Consolidated Backup, or VCB, and that facility is actually designed to make backups work. Because remember, if you've got 20 virtual machines, and you happen to be backing up those 20 virtual machines, in a classic scenario, you're going to have to install 20, let's say, EMC Legato Networker agents. Well, it becomes very cumbersome and very expensive. So CDB is designed to relieve the pressure on that thing and simplify the backing up of those 20 virtual machines in my example. So there's a tremendous amount of work that's happening in bringing these two environments together. I would say on that particular front, we're in the infancy stages within the industry. So all the more reason why I think the listener needs to ask the right questions as he or she looks at storage virtualization. Ask the right questions about how does it match or not match and integrate or not integrate with the server virtualization environment. Whether it's from ZenSource or VMware or Microsoft, it doesn't matter. The issues are at the fundamental level. And like I said, we're in the infancy stages at the moment. So buyer beware.
Well, Arun, I think that wraps it up for today's question and answer session. I want to thank our storage virtualization expert and frequent search storage contributor, Arun Taneja, for sharing his insights and expertise with us today. Arun, thanks so much.
Oh, you're quite welcome, Stephen. Thank you.
And I'm Stephen Bigelow, features writer for TechTarget Storage Media Group. You can learn more about storage virtualization and other storage technologies at www.searchstorage.com.